You are listening to Wait a Minute with Beth and Jessica,
episode 75. I'm Jessica Pearson, certified life coach.
And I'm Beth Barnett Babel, integrative nutrition therapist. We keep our eyes peeled for things in the media or in real life that come from diet culture or that perpetuate diet culture in some way. These are often the subtle ways it creeps in, which is why we are shining a light on it and sharing it with you.
Yay!
Jessica, you have a great topic for us today. Take us away.
Yeah, so you remember Dr. Becky. I think we've talked about her.
Oh, I follow Dr. Becky.
Yeah, you follow Dr.
Becky. Even though she mostly talks about kids of ages I don't have, it still is like good reminders, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, she's like my Instagram therapist slash...
Right. That makes sense because of the age of your child.
But she is a legit, for real child psychologist. Yeah. She has credentials. But you know what I thought was interesting? I just was on her Instagram. I went to her link tree, you know, and she doesn't have her credentials splattered about. She's like, I don't need to share these with you. You just know I'm a child psychiatrist. Some people say she's like the Dr. Spock of our time because she is so renowned for her advice on child rearing and behavior. And
Adam Grant called her the millennial parent advice guru.
She's so popular. There's actually a spoof account. There's this one guy that dresses up like Dr. Becky and he like makes fun of her and it's so funny. And I hope that she thinks it's funny because I'm like, I love you and I love these jokes.
Yeah.
So anyway, she brought up an example. There was a clip that I saw on Instagram and I couldn't help but draw what she was saying about child behavior and food.
Yeah. You sent it to me. It was, and I agreed.
Yeah, there's a parallel here. So what she explained was that feelings, without skills to manage those feelings, come out as, quote, bad behavior. Mm-hmm. Or that bad behavior is a feeling or an urge without the skill to manage it or to access the skill in the moment. Mm. Yeah. And I like the part about being able to access this skill in the moment because I think that's the hard part.
Key. I mean, having preteens and teens, they still cannot access the skill in the moment sometimes. And you're just like,
well, for them, it's like a little bit about prefrontal cortex, right? Not having a fully developed prefrontal cortex. But for us.
Oh, you mean like as adults and applying this to food?
Yeah, as adults, I think it's just like, yeah, when you're in fight, flight, freeze, it's still very hard to access skills. But as Dr. Becky pointed out, for whatever reason, we've learned to punish the behavior. But the behavior is just the sign of the lack of the skill. So it's like punishing the behavior is not helpful at all. Why are we doing this? And so when I think about this in diet culture or with our food habits, you know, you might realize that you're binging or overeating or just eating too much sugar, you know, over a prolonged period of time, whatever is happening for you. And so many people seek to end that behavior. And then that comes through some form of punishment, some version of punishment, which might be like setting an extreme boundary, like I'm never going to have sugar again, or I'm going to feel shame and guilt about my behavior and beating myself up mentally, emotionally. And we know this from our experience with clients, like that's not the way that we deal with that.
Right.
So it's like, well, why, you know, diet culture kind of taught us to only focus on the behavior without what, you know, my coach would call what remains or what is left when you stop using food to cope. So here's an example. If you're stressed and you go to the pantry for a bag of chips and you find yourself eating the whole bag while sitting on the couch or something, you don't have to punish yourself for eating the bag of chips, even though that's what diet culture taught us, right? Weight Watchers, at least 10 years ago, would have been like, you are out of points for the next week.
That'd be it. It'd be like, you're over your points.
You're done. But it's like the real work or the issue is to figure out how to build a set of skills and the accessibility to them for managing that stress or whatever the feeling is for you outside of coping with food.
Right. Yeah, that makes total sense.
And I think Noom started to touch on this, right? They were like, we're going to, you know, dive a little bit into the psychology of food. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember if Weight Watchers, I don't think they did that. And even with all of this discussion around weight loss drugs, right? I have clients who are taking weight loss drugs and even though their mind is not overthinking food any longer, their mind will just go somewhere else and overthink something else. And so they're still finding that what remains, right? Those feelings are still there. It's just like they're not using food to cope with that feeling anymore, but they haven't built the skill or the tool set to know what to do when you're not using the food.
Yes. I see it come out in all sorts of ways, like because they're no longer focusing on food, whatever, they then start focusing on a relationship or on their job or many other things. And so I think that we use one thing and then instead of, you know, learning some different skill sets or mind shifts or whatever, we just then just make our attention be on something else, like something else isn't right or something else needs fixing. Or
yeah, so it's like you can start by taking away the behavior, which I think is what the benefit of the weight loss drug, right? It's like, oh, we're just taking away the overeating and the snacking without cause, right? It's just going away. But then when we rip away the behavior, you still have the same thoughts and the same feelings.
Mm-hmm. It's just that something else.
Yeah, it's like these are the things we were trying to really run away from.
Right.
But they don't just go away.
They become louder.
Yeah. And like, you know, this might sound woo-woo or totally, and I think you believe the same thing. Like, I do believe that if it is not dealt with, it comes back louder and louder in the form of disease or mental illness. It can get so loud that it takes you down.
Yeah, if you're not listening, it will always find a way to help you answer.
Yeah, so what do we do? But I wanted to explain this visual that I had in mind, and okay. I don't know, can I...
Please. I love visuals.
I was like, I'm going to try to do this on Canva. And I don't know. I'm like, did I see this before? So you tell me if you've seen this before. So first I imagined like a circle, right? Doesn't have to be little. It's just a circle.
Okay.
And in this circle is your ick feeling, right? Like it's whatever it is for you. Stress, grief, sadness, guilt, shame, all the things that don't feel good, right? And when we're in that circle, feels like our whole world. It just feels like it's all consuming and that's all we can put our attention on. And of course we want to run away from it because nobody wants to feel.
No one wants to carry the ick ball around.
Nobody does. And so what we do then, if we're using food or alcohol or shopping, whatever it is we're using to cope with this circle of ick, it's like this little circle that overlaps it. Right. It's like the same size circle. Then we just shift this like screen on top. It's kind of transparent and it only lasts for a short amount of time. Yeah. So I think of like the potato chips. It's like I'm just putting potato chips on this problem as my Band-Aid.
Right.
And it does change the color of that circle. Maybe it's like, OK, we're changing the way this feels right now, but it's not a permanent solution.
Right.
And so I think like when you build your skill set to deal with the ick circle, you don't have to band-aid it so much. And so then in comes this much larger circle.
Okay.
So now there's a big circle and your little circle is still here. But now the little circle is not your whole world because now you have this big circle, right? The larger circle encompasses the circle of ick. And the larger circle is the representation of this expansion of your ability to feel other feelings.
It's like giving the ick a hug.
Totally. I love that.
It's like, I got you. Let's go.
Yeah. It's like, it's still there, but it's not your whole world anymore.
Yeah.
And when you gain these skills, you expand your capacity for feeling more things.
Okay.
Not just the ick, but the good things too. Because what I've also found is when people are, you know, not able to feel the feeling, we've discovered they're also not able to feel the good feelings to their full capacity.
Right.
And I've experienced this, and it's just, it's fascinating to me. It's like when we grow our capacity to feel, it's not just like we're growing our capacity to deal with the bad stuff. Suddenly, the good stuff also feels so much bigger and more genuine, and we're able to receive it more.
Yes.
You know, and it's like, nobody wants to feel the ick circle.
Right, because like, you know, who wants to feel pain or anger or sad or like stress or like the doom and gloom of the political world or what have you? You know, like who wants to feel that? So we try to mask it in. Or, I mean, I guess there are some people that just double down on the ick and then the ick becomes so big that they can't think of other things.
Yeah, that's such a good point because I think sometimes we stew in the ick or the ick becomes a comfort zone.
Yeah.
And that's not the best place to stay either. I don't even know if it's dealing with your ick. I think it's just stewing in it.
Yeah.
Like, is it? Yeah, it's not like a healthy place.
No.
So, yeah, it's like, how do we expand our ability to feel? It's just normal if you are someone who is like, well, why would I want to feel pain? Why would I want to feel anger or stress? Mm-hmm. You know, your brain is wired to seek pleasure and avoid pain. So if you've been doing this, I just want to say it's 100% normal. It's the way our brains are wired. Mm-hmm. What is different is that we also live in this new environment that we've talked about before, yes. Right? Where now it's so much easier to avoid things.
So much easier. And, you know, almost encouraged a little bit.
100%
You know, encouraged. It's just kind of encouraged to live a little, relax a little, treat yourself, like all the things. The commercials will oftentimes be about like how to stressful, whatever. Like they play into the thing to treat yourself.
Totally. I mean, even with my three-year-old, like sometimes we'll have the TV on and he's like, that looks good. It's like a pizza commercial. Not that we don't eat pizza, of course, but it's just like I can see how the advertising, you know, the images, it just all like clicks in and it's designed to create so much dopamine and serotonin. And that's what we're swimming in mm-hmm. all the time is dopamine and serotonin in the form of food, social media, alcohol, whatever it is, toys, you know, like whatever mm-hmm. it is
yeah.
for us. And it's become this normal thing that we always need it. And if we don't have it, we're probably going to die.
Yeah, we're definitely heavy dopamine seeking society because there are so many things that are very heavy to deal with. Like our ick bubble can be lots of little bubbles or we can make one big ever expanding bubble. But it still is like there's always something that we don't really want to deal with. And I think what's hard is that life has always been challenging. You know, we've never had it like, quote unquote, super easy to be human. Just it changes. And right now, there are just so many things coming from every direction on how much we take in. And so then it becomes much more like, I cannot handle one more thing. So let me just keep trying to soothe.
Yeah, because if you have your own personal stuff going on and then you're reading the world news.
No, game over. It's like, well,
yeah.
Another peanut butter cup sounds great. Yeah.
So then the question becomes, okay, so what are the skills?
Yeah.
What do we teach? What do we practice ourselves? Mm-hmm. Obviously, there's a lot of different things that we have in our tool belt. And I think everyone is unique. And we often in clients, it's like, well, let's try this and see how it works for you. Right. And then if that doesn't work, we try another thing. Or if that works, that's great. Let's also add this to your toolbox. Right. So there's a lot of different ways that we do this and everyone is so unique. So I don't know. Let's just talk about how do we build the skill set to reduce our need to cope with food?
Yeah. So I think the first one is you got to build awareness because without awareness, you have no idea what is what. And so starting to be aware of what your thoughts, what your feelings are, and then learning to acknowledge those feelings and how to build around them. So I think that is like a key place to start that a lot of people really underestimate the power of just building that awareness.
Totally. Wouldn't you say that, I don't know, I've noticed with myself and other clients that it can actually be really challenging to even admit to yourself that you're feeling a negative feeling. So like for me, I was like, I'm feeling this thing and like, I don't know what it is. It feels like anger. And somebody was like, you are angry. I was like, what?
Okay. <Yeah.
laughs> Like for whatever reason, I had this mental block that like, I was maybe not allowed to feel anger about something. Hmm. And I was like, wait, I am mad. And they're like, yeah, be mad. I was like, I can do that. Like, you know, because it's like, oh, there's all this programming about don't be mad or like, be the nice girl or oh, be right. the good girl.
Good vibes only.
Totally. And it's like, oh yeah, like, why are you mad? Don't be mad. You know? And I'm like,
right.
Wait a second. I can be mad. Right. And I'm allowed to feel anger. And holding anger or feeling anger does not mean that I'm a bad person.
Yeah.
Like that was mind blown. And I just feel like a lot of us, especially women, have a challenging time tapping into some of these negative emotions because we're just like, everything's fine.
It's great. <We're good>. Yeah. I do all the things. it's normal and okay to feel this like stressed and
yeah, or like resentment. I don't want to feel resentment. That's not a feeling I want to admit to myself that I have. But I'm like, I feel that. I have that sometimes.
Yeah.
And like, that's part of being human and that's okay. That doesn't mean that you're a bad wife. You know, like sometimes we feel these feelings. So I think it's just also having the bravery, the honesty and the courage to be like, yeah, sometimes I'm pissed off and that's okay. And in some cases, I think these big feelings feel very unsafe to explore. Have you experienced that with clients?
Yes. Very recently, actually. But yes.
Yeah. It's like maybe a feeling. I think, you know, sometimes we do like these body scans, right? And we're like trying to figure out where in my body I feel it. And I've noticed some people are like, I can't get below the neck. And that's really common. Like if you're hearing this and you're that person, I'm not talking about you because
it's just a lot of people.
Yeah, it's a lot of people. So, you know, there's ways to titrate this or do it in small doses to give your body and brain more capacity to go there and to experience the sensation in your body. And I love, like, you know, Beth does parts work. IFS, you know, can be really beneficial as far as like parsing out. This feeling is only a part of you. It's not all of you. And how can we talk to that part of ourselves and offer that part of ourselves?
I think people get scared with that. Part of it is that negative sensation, but they don't realize that it's just a sensation in your body. Like it, people think something bad is going to happen, but it's not. Like that's a normal part of the nervous system. So a thought, emotion is connected with the feeling in the body. And because it doesn't feel good, we must shun. And the more you push, the bigger it can become. And so it's being able to know that it's just a sensation in your body. And it can't actually kill you, even though it feels in some cases an anxiety like it will, but it can't. And so it's just kind of tapping into it a little bit and just like getting used to that idea of feeling it.
Yeah. And I think that's really how we all do it, how we have to do it. It's just a little bit at a time.
Yeah, you don't want to take it all at one time.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes I'm like, are those the days where I'm just like crying in the shower for 3 hours? I don't know. I'm like, I'm just going to let it all out, you know?
Yeah.
So there's lots of tools, I think, that help us build awareness and, you know, experience these feelings, witness the feelings. And so like IFS is one of them. We've been doing the integrative hypnosis stuff, which is really great. You know, somatic experiencing techniques. There's a lot of ways to go here. And, you know, it doesn't have to be something where it's like time consuming per se, right? It's just like a little practice that you build over time. Yeah. So the second one is really just working on building self-compassion, which is, do not talk to yourself the way you do.
Yeah.
If you're being mean to yourself, it's like, would I say this to my best friend? No. Well, then why am I saying it to myself? And just thinking like, well, of course I wanted a bag of chips on the couch.
Right.
You know, like instead of beating yourself up for that, it's like you were having a really hard day. Like that thing that happened was so difficult and that felt really bad in my body. And like eating a bag of chips was the only tool that I had at the moment.
Yeah.
You know, just being really like kind to yourself and, you know, you can always go back and be like, huh, like what else could, you know, how else, what tool could I practice next time I feel this feeling? But compassion is really the only way that we get through those experiences. Like when we're mean to ourselves and beating ourselves up for the behavior, it's not helpful.
Yeah. No one changes under duress willingly.
Yeah. And this is the one that everybody is like, well, isn't that just giving up or letting myself off the hook?
No. It's really hard to feel self-compassion for real in the face of feeling the feelings. Awareness plus compassion for yourself is challenging, and it's not giving yourself off the hook.
No. Because, yeah, off the hook would be not doing the work at all.
Yeah. Just be like... pass. Swiping. Was it left? Swipe left.
Swipe right.
Swipe right. Left. Which way? I don't know which direction. I've never used a date now, but it's whatever direction you don't want, you're swiping.
Yeah. So then it's like, once you've built awareness and we're practicing self-compassion, we also can work on reducing that mental load mm-hmm. by witnessing what are the stories I'm telling myself mm-hmm. and learning how to parse out the facts from the story. And can I rewrite these stories so they're not so heavy on me? They're not so damaging to me. Mm-hmm. And the more that you practice that, the more it becomes kind of like the more automatic way of thinking.
Yeah. I think people don't realize like how busy our brains are all the time. And most of what is going on in there is actually not useful.
Yeah.
And so we call it the monkey brain. And that's just, it's noisy and busy, and it just is filling up space to fill up space. And so if you were to actually write out or type out or, you know, say out like what your brain was saying, and you look at it, most of it's total junk. So mm-hmm. it can be really important to realize that most of the thoughts that you think are not real or helpful in any capacity.
Yeah, and that's no shade to you as a person.
It's people. It's just part of the weird human condition.
It's just the way brains work, right? And so we are training our brain to react differently, to be proactive differently. You know, for me, a lot of it is like from a trauma response, my husband could say something as simple as like, why is this towel out? Right? And my brain could automatically go to a very dark place. When I realized that about myself, I was able to like pause. So it's like, yeah, maybe my brain still will go there immediately, but I don't have to react from that space. I can be like, he just asked about a towel.
Right.
And then I can like breathe and just be like, oh yeah, here's the story about the towel. And like, it can be calm and I don't have to react in a way that's going to start an argument. And so there's just these things that we do. We react certain ways, or we overthink things in certain ways that are just not helpful. And we don't have to do that. And so the more that we can reduce that mental load through coaching and sorting that stuff out, like the better off you're going to be, the stronger your brain will become.
So, of course, once you get there, you start building that awareness and seeing what's going on inside your brain, you can start building in new helpful habits. And so this is our favorite thing of the 1% change. So taking that pause is like a huge shift in changing your behaviors, because you get to react from a new place when you are mm-hmm. able to have a pause. If you can have the pause, you may not find yourself going into the kitchen for more stuff or just kind of mindlessly eating. The pause is crucial. So finding stuff like that, or getting some movement, or calling or texting a friend, like these things are, you know, texting, would you like to hear what my brain is telling me right now?
That's my favorite text with you. I do that with you and Sheila Nova. You're like, let me tell you about this thing that happened to my brain, you know, and you're like, ooh, tell me more.
Yeah. So those things can be really helpful, is to start to be able to get these things out, building up these new helpful habits.
Yeah. I think one of those skills that is easier to access is like, okay, you find yourself in front of the pantry and you're like, what is 1% difference of what I could do now versus the last time I just grabbed the bag and ran to the couch?
Yeah.
It's like, whoa, well, you know what? I'm going to put like a bunch of chips in a bowl, or I'm going to have chips and some hummus, you know, to add a little protein to the snack or whatever. There's all these different versions of what that could look like, but it's just like, what would 1% difference be that's going to help me feel better at the end of this situation?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And then really this all goes to say, this is just about practicing, mm-hmm. right? So there is, you know, I don't know what somebody said. They're like, with health, there's like no end game. Your health is while you're living.
Right.
The end is when you die.
Yeah. It's the end.
And that might sound depressing, but I think it's encouraging, mm-hmm. right? Because we're not looking at like, you just have to be really perfect for 2 weeks or a month.
And then you'll get there. And then that's it. You've achieved it.
Yeah. No, it's like, this takes time. You know, progress is not perfection, mm-hmm. and it's not linear. Our lives are this ebb and flow of circumstances, and we grow and expand throughout those. Mm-hmm. And that's why I think we're here, right? Is to offer you support in these spaces where you need support in your expansion. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I will say that sometimes building awareness takes outside input.
Yeah.
Because sometimes totally. You're not fully aware of the situation until somebody helps to show it to you in a way, not in a shaming way, but in a way that's like, hey, have you noticed this? And then it becomes like, oh, and then it's like a whole new light of thoughts of something that wasn't available.
Yeah. I think I've said this before on the podcast, but it's like you're in a bottle. And it's like, there's the label. It's right in front of your eyes, but the label's facing outwards.
Right.
So you can't read what's on the label. Uh-huh. So sometimes having that other person there can be like, oh, this is what the label says. Did you know that? And you're like, oh. And so then it gives you that awareness of what's outside of you. Because when you're in it, you're in it. It's hard to see right. What's on the outside.
Yeah.
So yeah, this just goes to show that your, quote, bad habits with food are not just about eat this, not that, right? Like, I get so mad.
Every time I'm like, ugh. I get such a visceral reaction and I try to hold it together anytime I hear eat this, not that, every time.
I get it. I mean, yes, there are these ways of eating and ways of looking at things, and I think that's fine. I'm not here to, you know, well, I am judging it and that's okay. But counting calories and just focusing on weight loss is whatever, but your relationship with food and the reasons why you're eating or using food to cope, to me, is so much more interesting and so much more valuable to you in the long run. It's like the root of the behavior.
Amen, sister.
If you're somebody who's like, yeah, I do want to go there. I don't want to focus on the calories or the macros or even the scale. I want to get to the root of some of this behavior stuff and expand my circle. Let's do it.
Yeah, come talk to us. Yeah. We can be a part of your circle. I'm curious. I wonder if it will show up.
Beth has the magic touch.
Yeah. And if you're listening to this, my computer has all these things. And so I get thumbs up, heart hands, balloons at any moment in time while talking.
She makes gestures with her hands and graphics show up.
It's very fascinating.
It's amazing.
So, we've got a new one today. Well, I sure hope we gave you something new to think about today and helped you take one more step on your path to freeing yourself from diet culture. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast and follow us on Instagram @path_nutrition. Come learn more about our offerings and work with us at pathnutrition.com.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.